Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Long and Winding Railroad. This is the, what month is this? Is this the month of May? This is the May edition of the Long Winding Railroad. You have to forgive me. Ever since last month, it's been kind of a whirlwind here at the Long and Winding Railroad headquarters. And joining me on this episode, who could I follow Eddie Kingston with, but with one of Eddie Kingston's biggest fans, and that's Richard Benson, a.k.a. Benno. Benno, how are you, sir?
I'm good, man. I felt like you needed the come down match, you know, you needed the cool down after having the big Eddie Kingston appearance. So I will take it personally, but, you know, I'm honored to be on the same show as Eddie and absolutely love that show and the video you guys put up on YouTube. So, yeah, feeling nervous about following that, but, you know, I will do our best.
The way I look at it, and this is me being honest, is like, this is a role. I'm on a roll from Eddie Kingston to you. And then hopefully next month is going to be the first appearance on the show of John Pollock. That's the plan. So
I'm definitely the cool down then. Yeah, 100%.
No. You are also part of the momentum of that as well. And then, yeah, we'll see what happens after John next month in July. But I got a special plan for that episode. Is going to be a special episode. But yeah, I'm excited to have you on. I think it's been a while since you and I've done actually like a one-on-one podcast. I did make a, you know, as of this recording, I did make a special appearance on your show over at Grapple on the Spotlight, on the pre-show. And I hope that went well. I hope Maddie Edwards was pleasantly surprised by
that. Was so funny. Like, Matty's like one of my dearest friends, and he's new to the podcasting world. So to him, like, you're a huge celebrity. You still are to me. I hold you in high esteem, even though we are good friends. You know, but like, we didn't tell him that you were coming on to confront him and challenge him on his horrific views about Randy Orton and Edge and the fact that he thinks WWE is good in general. But yeah, you two, like, it's a worlds colliding that I never expected to happen, WH Park and Matty going back and forth. But I think we found out that you've got more in common than people might expect.
And maybe we can try to get him into liking good wrestling, like, you know, All Japan for wrestling from the 90s or something, you know, something
that'd be so much fun. But he's open-minded because he's very much a WWE fan, but he watch indies, he watches territory stuff. Japan is a bit of like, I don't think it's something he's hugely got into it in general, but I think you could educate him. I think he's good.
He needs the right compilation DVD set, I think, because I know he's just still a big DVD. He's a big physical media person, as am I. Like, if anyone's ever seen my collection of burned DVDs, it's quite extensive. I do miss the Crazy Max forums, I have to say. but I do want to say before we get started, Benno, I want to thank.
Sorry, before we go on, I just wanted to say I was gifted by one of our Grapple patrons a physical DVD here, mate. I thought me and you could maybe review it one day. Gladiators of New Frontier, the deathmatch compilation, feels like something might be right up your street.
For FMW?
Yep.
Listen, is there any Hayabusa or Masato Tanaka or Mike Awesome on that?
Masato Tanaka versus Mr. Pogo, Cactus Jack versus Kanemura. Everything else is not listed. But there you go, that's enough. That's a selling point. Gladiators in there, Mike Awesome. He's on the show.
And does Dan the Mouth Lebransky do the commentary on that?
I believe he does. Yeah, his name's at the bottom.
I remember hearing about when he would get flown over to, I think, to California, to Los Angeles to record those for the company that made those DVDs. So that was always a cool thing. That I know who the commentator on these these things are. But before we get started, I just want to thank Eddie Kingston for appearing on last month's episode. It was our most watched episode and kind of made our debut here on the YouTube gimmick for the Long and Winding Railroad doing video. So from here on in, we're gonna try to do this video as much as possible. Thanks to all the people who like gave so much positive feedback and retweets of that show. And it was really helped contribute to the popularity of that episode. Also our new revised version of the Long and Winding Railroad t-shirt. Sales of that were so amazing. And we got to donate a sizable amount to both the Japanese Red Cross and to Doctors Without Borders in Canada, and with a lot of proceeds of that, those that money going towards relief in the Ukraine, which is really a part of the world that really needs as much help as it can get for the people there. So thank you to everyone who's bought a t-shirt, who's retweeted, supported that episode and the shirt. And yeah, you know what? You can still buy the shirt. It's still on sale. And we're going to have Eddie again on in the future. But today with Benno, we're going to do actually... When I asked you to come on board, when I asked you to pick a match that you wanted to review, you gave me a couple of choices and we were talking about different things, but you picked the match we're going to talk about today, which is not necessarily an All Japan match because it doesn't happen on All Japan soil, so to speak. It happens on a New Japan show. It's called the New Japan Super Fight at the Tokyo Dome. And but it has a lot of All Japan talent. So including the match we're going to talk about, but before we get to that, Benno, I want to kind of ask you, what do you have any kind of background or history with All Japan Pro Wrestling of the 90s? Because it's not something I ever heard you talk about, to be quite honest.
No, we had a little period on Spotlight where I was going back and watching some old stuff. Like for me, like my introduction would have been through Virtual Pro Wrestling 2. On the N64, like I was the nerd who you know, getting that imported, and you know, later on, you know, getting it to work on ROMs on the N64. I also had the great mod of No Mercy, where I had the ROH roster in 2004 that I was a big fan of, and prevalent in the there was a whole scene of that stuff, modders and all kinds. They're still going now. People hack moves into the games and all kinds, but. Like a big thing in that community was the idea that like Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 was better than No Mercy and better than WrestleMania 2000. It basically is. It's WrestleMania 2000. Like that game is just a reskin version of Virtual Pro Wrestling 2. And you know, you can see it in the moves a lot of the wrestlers use, and that bled into like the No Mercy game, where when you created the wrestler, you could give them Kawada kicks and all of these different moves that maybe, you know, teenage Benno might not have 100% recognized, but you know, as time went on, you realize, oh, that's why that particular pose is in the game. Oh, that's the Orange Crush. Oh, I get it now. And yeah, like I started to play that game with only like a slight real like knowledge of who the people were. Obviously, you know, Vader's in the game. You know, the San Hansen's in the game, the two men we're going to talk about today. Bart Gunn's in the game, Mike Barton, you know, and those kinds of guys, Johnny Ace, and obviously, you know, Kobashi Misawa, all of those guys on the All Japan roster. So that was kind of my introduction. And around the same time, I was getting into the internet in the early 2000s and becoming a message board idiot. And like Kazaa was a big thing. Did you ever use Kazaa for file sharing?
No, I wasn't really into the internet until like at home until like, you know, we got like high speed. it was over like cables and not through your phone line. So
well, this is the thing on the wrestling forums I was on, that'd be like recommended match lists and things that you'd be looking on Kazaa for. Like I remember like there was like a Dynamite Kids selection that I really wanted to get, and you know, you get the obviously big Misawa Kobashi matches, you hear the legend of that stuff, and you'd spend an hour just trying to download a GIF of like one big spot in the match or something like that. That was a big thing at a time. Well, not a GIF, but like a short video back then. But yeah, that, you know, I had dial up myself and I'd spend like a week, you know, trying to download these matches and like leaving it running and hoping that whoever was sharing it was online at the time. It's a different world. These kids today don't know they're born with the modern torrent system. But like, you know, we'll get into the match we're going to talk about today, and that was one of them that I had. That's why I mentioned it, because obviously, you know, the lore of the Vader's Eye and all of that stuff was a big thing. But yeah, you know, I think for me it would have been bits and bobs, like watching those matches in kind of a jumble of order and maybe not really understanding the full context to it, to the point where, you know, I had a couple of comp discs, and like one of my favorite things to do was to throw Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 on and, you know, have like that comp disc running on the side on like a second TV and watch the matches and stuff. So that was kind of my introduction to it. Like, have I got, you know, the A to Z kind of knowledge of it and the, you know, year by year what's going on? No, that's what this podcast series is for, and that's what I'm learning as I go with everybody else. But Yeah, definitely. I've seen more of it than you may think.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, at least you know the names of all the four pillars. At least that's a good start to jump from.
We'll take that.
And shout out to Virtual Pro Wrestling too. I love that game. I have to get a ROM of that because I don't think my N64 will work again.
That's still got my behind
me. Especially, I don't have a TV that would play that scaled of resolution. I only have high definition TVs, and I'd have to either buy some kind of device to scale down the TV, which I don't think looks good. I tried that on my TV back in Japan, and I didn't really like the results of that. So I do think I'm going to have to either get a ROM of that and just buy a USB, N64 controller and play it on the computer at some point.
So.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Never been topped to this day. It's never been topped because that's the thing that game got right. It was always the finishing sequence and the sway of a match and the near falls and how the momentum can change. They nailed something in that game that they've literally not nailed in another game since.
I thought the best part was that they had an MMA engine for the guys who had a more of an MMA based offense, including actual MMA fighters that they, because it's Japan and they just call them something else. But if you go through the creator wrestler, you can make certain legit MMA fighters in this game and have them have shoot fights. They had a shoot fight promotion in there that based on rings. It's an incredible game. I at some point I'm gonna have to just make the time to okay, download it, set it up, get a proper controller for the computer with that's N64 based, and then I just start playing it again, including maybe I'll include the 2004 Ring of Honor the roster in there and have a match with Kobashi. Orange Crush Kobashi versus Samoa Joe. Not
there you go.
And I wanted to say that Benno does have legit, four pillars credentials because he has seen Kenta Kobashi live in one of the greatest matches he's ever had against Samoa Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I mention it every now and then, on Grapple Spotlight that I was there live at that match. But still the greatest. I mean, I was at Nigel Bryan as well, and the famous Dragon Gate 6-man of ROH, but Kobashi Joe's another level. That is the greatest match I've ever seen live, and I don't think it'll ever be topped. And the moment that Kobashi came out in New York, there weren't that many of us there, less than 1,000, I think, were in the New Yorker hotel, the loudest pop I think I've ever heard. It's great. It's you watch that match back now, and I think the most beautiful thing about it is the story behind it. That Kobashi thought he was going to come to the US and he was going to have to be a foreign heel, and Joe convinced him, no, these people are going to know who you are. When he came out, he was under no doubt that these people knew who he was, and it was a crowd full of people who'd used Kazar and tape traded and played all those old games and knew who he was. So yeah, I'm proud that I was there for that one.
So there you go. People might say, oh, he doesn't know enough to be on the show. He's seen Kobashi live. That's good enough for me. He saw Kobashi's greatest matches of all time. So, but we're going to talk about a very legendary match between, it is actually an interpromotional match. So I do think it counts as being an All Japan match as well, because it is featuring from the New Japan side. He is the current IWGP heavyweight champion at this time. It's Big Van Vader. And challenging him on this interpromotional show, the New Japan Pro Wrestling Super Fight in Tokyo Dome show, is All Japan's legendary, top foreign wrestler. And in my opinion, the greatest foreign wrestler ever to set foot on Japanese shores. And that is Stan the Lariat Hansen. And this comes from a show from February 10th, 1990. And not besides Stan Hansen, we also had Steve Williams was on the show. Jumbo Tsuruta was on the show. Yoshiaki Yatsu was on the show. Jinichiro Tenryu and Tiger Mask 2, who was of course Mitsuhara Misawa, were all on this show. And I'm gonna, before we get into the match itself, I'm gonna go through the card. But Ben, what's your history with this particular match?
Yeah, it's the legend of it. It was tape trader's dream at the time, wasn't it? Being able to advertise the fact that, this is the famous match where, you hear different stories. Vader's eye completely fell out. He had to push it back in himself. He broke his nose, or it happened on a lariat or whatever. And it's a bit more innocuous than that. But I was fully aware of the story. And that was the thing. I think that's the drawing factor of this match and why it was one of the ones that I would have, had at the time, and one of the ones that I would have downloaded at the time. It's the legend itself more than the match. And yeah, this is probably the first time I've watched it in about maybe 20 years, something like that. I don't know if it's it's one that you've revisited a lot.
No, it's I think I've watched it maybe once or twice, maybe more than 10 years ago. And then, yeah, I mean, it's with wrestling. Like, I think the thing we have to keep in mind with wrestling is that there's so much wrestling just coming out every week. It's hard to keep up. And, you know, I love going back. Obviously, that's the whole purpose of this show, is to go back and kind of talk about things that maybe other people don't know about, but have heard about, and revisit these matches and talk about them. And a lot of times for this show, like, I haven't seen some of these matches in a long, long time. And I love revisiting them. And this is one of those. And I always remember, like, yeah, this is the match. Like, if you're familiar with either Vader, you've heard of this match. And you never heard of Stan Hansen, you've heard of this match. If you're only familiar with Stan Hansen, you don't know that much about Vader, you've heard of this match. Because it is such an important match for both men's histories. And it stems from, like, this idea of, like, this rare idea of All Japan and New Japan working together on this show, you know, All Japan helping New Japan out in this case, because it is their Tokyo Dome show, and they wanted to kind of bolster up attendance, and they thought, well, what can we do? Well, we can have, you know, to promote some All Japan talent show up on this match, and it helped their attendance for the show, definitely. But also the idea that you have at this time, like, Vader, is, you know, originally, of course, he was in the AWA as Leon White, and that's the first time he ever met Stan Hansen. And if you ever see clips of that match, or the full match, I think you can find the full match on YouTube, of, like, Vader just beating the Stan Hansen just beating the shit out of Leon White. And then years later, they're both huge stars in Japan. Like, Vader is the IWGP champion. He's one of the few foreigners to hold that title. I think he might have been the first foreigner to ever hold that title in New Japan. And Stan Hansen has been, you know, like a champion in All Japan Pro Wrestling. He's the most popular, you know, foreign wrestler to ever come through to any promotion in Japan. And even to, like, up to, like, yeah, I'd say this day, like, when I was teaching in Japan, you know, people, like, I would, you know, people would say, oh, you like professional wrestling. Do you know who Stan Hansen is? They would ask me, do you know who Stan Hansen is? Yeah. Do you know who Stan Hansen is? Like, yeah. Do you watch wrestling? No, but I know who Stan Hansen is. But then I'd say, do you know who Kenny Omega is? I don't know. Who's that? You know, like, so people telling me, like, Kenny Omega is the most popular wrestler ever, foreign wrestler to ever wrestle in Japan, is, like, it's complete horseshit. It's not. It's Stan Hansen. I can prove it definitively, because I can go to any nostalgia shop in Japan, like, you know, good shop in Japan, and I could probably find some fucking Stan Hansen memorabilia from, like, you know, the last 30 years, or even Terry Funk, probably more popular historically than Kenny Omega ever was. Then, like, and if I try to find Kenny Omega merch, no, not as easy to find. But Stan Hansen, yes, and he had such, because he had such a cultural penetration throughout the Japanese, you know, society, throughout Japanese society through television, and not just being a wrestler, but, like, in commercials and things like that. So he was definitely a legend outside of wrestling. So, like, you know, people are familiar with him. Oh, he's going to fight this other guy who's, like, a huge, you know, like, wrestling superstar, and he's a foreigner and he's a big man. And these two at the time, I got to think were considered the two best big men in wrestling at the time, Benno.
Yeah. I watched the, you know, in prep for this, watched a couple of, like, huge interviews with Hansen and Vader, like, interesting to, like, hear their dynamic and kind of thoughts on each other. And, you know, Vader's Vader, you know, he's not at ease putting anybody over, really, or, you know, admitting, you know, that he was maybe, you know, inexperienced early in his career when he came up against Stan Hansen. What was his name early in his career? It was something. It was
Baby, like, Bull. Baby Bull. Leon White.
Which, like, straight away you knew he wouldn't like that, because it just completely defines him down immediately. But he's, like, on the come up, obviously, when they first meet, and he was kind of, you know, the interviewer and the interview I watched was saying to him, oh, did you feel differently, you know, when it came around to this match, that maybe, you know, you were equals now and how far you've come? And he was just like, no, didn't really think of it like that. I just, you know, kind of saw Stan as an equal. But yeah, maybe if you look back on things and look back in time, maybe I can see what you mean. I can see that maybe I had something to prove whenever I was in there with him, because of who I was, you know, relative to him in the 80s, and then, you know, the other times that they came across each other. And that's the thing, you can see it in this match, that, you know, they are at this point, you know, equals, and Vader is, you know, a gigantic star in his own right. And, you know, maybe, you know, he still talks with about Hansen with a bit of, you know, respect there. And Hansen still kind of in the bits, the talking head bits I saw, kind of talks of him as like a, you know, he sees him as like a Vader, you know, as that young wrestler that he was when he came across him in the 80s and stuff. But yeah, by this point, obviously, yeah, you know, that had very much changed. And, you know, you're looking at two gigantic stars, and that's obvious from everything in the presentation of it.
Yeah. So let's take a look at this show. I'm just going to run through the match listings here, and then we're going to get to talking about the match itself. So this is the NJPW Super Fight in Tokyo Dome, February 10th, 1990. And so starting off the show was Osamu Matsuda, who would later become famous as El Samurai, taking on Takashi Iizuka, as he would later change his name, the man with the oven mitt that he likes to jam into people, which I hate because it looks so fucking cheap, that gimmick. Tag team match, Akira Nogami and Jushin Thunder Liger taking on Naoki Sano and Pegasus Kid, who, you know, is Chris Benoit. Six-man tag team match, Hiroshi Hase, Kentaro Hoshino, and Kuniaki Kobayashi versus the Blonde Outlaws, Hiro Saito, Norio Honaga, and Tatsutoshi Goto. Singles match, Brad Ringens from the AWA taking on Russian super wrestler Victor Zangief. Singles match between Dr. Death Steve Williams versus another Russian. A lot of these Russian amateur wrestlers were doing a lot of shit in New Japan in the early 90s because like Inoki had like a hard-on for these types of wrestlers. But Steve Williams took on Salman Hashimakov. There was an AWA World Heavyweight Title match between, of course, at this time, Larry Zbysko. Sorry. Versus Masa Saito. And I can only imagine how bad that match might have been.
That's what we should have reviewed. That would be fun.
There's actually nothing All Japan about fucking Larry Zbysko. So no, we would never review that match on the show. There's a tag team match between the legendary Jumbo Tsuruta and his regular tag team partner, Yoshiaki Yatsu, collectively known as the Olympics. One of my favorite tag teams that I've recently discovered by going back and watching old matches for featuring Jumbo. And they took on the New Japan team of Kengo Kimura and Osamu Kido. Another tag team match with the other big star of native star of All Japan at the time, Jinichiro Tenryu. He's teaming with Mitsuhara Misawa's version of Tiger Mask. And they are taking on the team of George Sakano and Riki Choshu, which is kind of a big thing because Riki Choshu and Tenryu used to feud when Choshu originally jumped from New Japan to All Japan. And he feuded a lot with Jumbo and with Tenryu here. And then, of course, the match we're going to talk about, which was for the IWGP heavyweight title, Big Van Vader, who was the champion at the time, taking on the challenger Stan Hansen from All Japan Pro Wrestling. And then a couple of like matches after this, kind of, I don't know why they would follow the heavyweight IWGP title match. But I think one of these is like a come down match, and that's Crusher Bam Bam Bigelow. I love that they called him the Crusher. Like Bam Bam wasn't enough.
Yeah,
you gotta just Japanese wrestling has to include Crusher. And he took on Koji Katao, one of the most difficult wrestlers like you could ever probably have a match with. Just a terrible reputation Koji Katao had in wrestling. Tag team, and then finally the special main attraction tag team match with a special referee Lou Fez. And it was Masahiro Chono and Shinya Hashimoto, two of the three musketeers, taking on the team, the legendary team of Antonio Inoki and Seiji Sakaguchi. Go ahead.
That's quite funny because like I saw like in the Vader interview I saw, he was like, he seemed quite bitter about the fact they didn't go on last. But it's like Lou Fez is the referee and Inoki and Chono are there. Like, I mean, I feel like understandable that you're not in the main event, Leo, mate. Like, you know, it's you've got a non-finish in your match too. You know, he wasn't very complimentary about Hashimoto either, by the way. Called him fat and out of shape in the interview I saw, but you know, coming from Vader,
I probably Shinya Hashimoto didn't think too much of Vader, maybe, and they had no mutual respect between each other. I don't know necessarily. Hey, listen, like Shinya Hashimoto is one of the greatest like big men. Also, like for a man with like, you would like look at him, you think, who's this? Like, he looks like an overweight Elvis impersonator. But Shinya Hashimoto is one of the toughest men to ever step in the ring in Japanese wrestling. And that is saying something. And he made a lot more money for New Japan Pro Wrestling than Vader ever did. So there you go with that. But yeah, I mean, it's like Inoki and Sakaguchi, you got to understand, like, this is like the tag team that started New Japan in main events in the 70s. So it's like, this would be like Bruno Sammartino and Pedro Morales taking on the team of, I don't know, The Rock and fucking Steve Austin. That's what it is. If you want a WWF, WWE like kind of comparison. So in Japanese terms, like think about that, overlay that into in terms of Japanese professional wrestling. And then you understand why. Plus it's refereed by fucking Luthes, like a legendary man in Japan, because like they believed at the time, and that this is the time where like they still think it's a shoot, right? So professional wrestling. But we're going to talk about it. I'm sure, you know, Vader, rest his soul, like would be very happy that we're going to talk about this match, not about the main event that ended the show, but we're going to talk about his match with Stan Hansen. And I'll just go through my notes here and kind of run through the match with you here, Benno. And then anytime you want to step in, I'm going to throw it to you as well. I'll find, you know, breaks in the match to throw it to you. But let's talk about it. You know, as the video starts, Stan Hansen comes out first. His theme, Sunrise, is replaced for this broadcast TV version, which sucks because he's got one of my favorite themes in all of wrestling. But it's just this generic like theme that we hear when he comes out. But he gets a big reaction from the fans because they know this something special is about to happen with the arrival of Stan Hansen in the Tokyo Dome. Vader comes out next, as of course befitting being the heavyweight champion of New Japan at the time. And I felt he got even a bigger reaction as being the home Gaikokujin wrestler of New Japan at the time. And just so people understand, I use the word Gaikokujin because that means foreign person in Japanese, okay, and as opposed to the more common word of gaijin, which has very kind of like, you know, like negative, I would say even racist undertones. So like I do not use that word anymore, and people, I see there's like a bit of a debate about it on wrestling Twitter. Here's the thing: if you're pro like using gaijin, I'll just say this: as someone who lived in Japan for 10 years, none of my Japanese friends or students ever referred to me as a gaijin. They always said, oh, WH sensei or WH is a gaikokujin, that they were introducing me to their friends or acquaintances, like, oh, who's he? Oh, this is my friend, he's a gaikokujin, you know. So they never referred to me as gaijin because they know, Japanese people know, they don't want it. If wrestlers still use it, just means that wrestling in Japan, like wrestling in any other part of the world, is still kind of filled with people who have backwards way of thinking. So,
I was going to say this flies in the face of the explanation I got in Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, where it's explained to me that it's a great word and it just means outsider. You know, it's funny that it's like it's just something we've, I think, as wrestling fans, just taken on, and it's like, oh, I know what I'm talking about because I'm saying a word that, you know, rather than just saying foreigner or, you know, foreign star or something like that. Like I do it. I probably recently used it, you know, when talking New Japan or whatever on our podcast. It has kind of slipped into wrestling fan vernacular, hasn't it? That's been interesting to see that.
Well, I mean, you know, I bring it up also because like if you listen to the commentary, the Japanese commentary, they keep talking about number one gaijin wrestler, you know, when they're talking about Vader and Stan Hansen, like who is the number one gaijin wrestler in this, right? But like I just want to say to people who are listening that I'm trying to like kind of educate you about this is a better word to use. And listen, if you're too lazy to add two more fucking syllables, like I don't know what to say. Like that's your fucking problem. But I will say this: gaikokujin. Okay, so it's gaijin, and then you put two fucking extra syllables in the middle: gaikokujin. So I just said it's fucking slowly for all you fucking mouth breathers out there. All right, so you have no fucking friends excuse. As always, huh?
Me? Making friends as always.
Listen, then, anyone who's gonna be like, I don't like that he's all woke about this word and shit. Yeah, go fuck yourself. All right. Like I don't need these people to be my friends or listen to this show.
I'm I'm staying out of it. JP already riled up all the Noah fans in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, I'm trying to make friends here.
There you but go.
Like, but the, you know, the point you make about it being used on commentary here, is that something you'd hear today? Like, is that something
I don't think you'd ever hear from, like, an English commentator covering Japanese wrestling. I don't know. Like, I'm just saying my own experience. Like, no Japanese person I ever knew in the 10 years that I lived there ever used it to refer to me. Or right. used it really that much, to be honest. They would always talk about other foreigners that they knew as Gaikokuchin. So there you go. Anyways, we're you know, as soon as Vader enters the ring, like, and here's one of the things I really love about this match, Benno. As soon as Vader enters the ring, he just goes up to Stan Hansen and knocks off his cowboy hat, and this fucking match is already on.
Yeah, I was going to say, depending on who you believe, I think this is the point, because I think Vader has said before he broke his nose on the way into the ring as well, and that's what sets him off here, and that's why it starts with like the jump off. I think it's something to do with his entrance gear that he was, you know, that he was
like he said Hansen broke his nose before he got into the ring.
Yeah, something to do with when he was taking the guys off and getting into the ring, and his nose, yeah, was already gone at that point.
Okay,
whether that's true or not, I don't know.
I don't think Hansen had anything to do with that, because Hansen's in the ring, so yeah. And Vader's taking off his big mask gimmick, which I love that thing. Like when he would do the whole thing with, like, he set off the steam machine on that thing. Well, it was so cool.
It's funny. I got a funny relationship with Vader, because, like, you know, I was 12 in 1996 when he debuted in the WWF in the Rumble, but I'd seen him on WCW TV on ITV in the 90s doing, like, you know, squashes against, you know, he'd squash like three jobbers, and he always came across as like the biggest badass in the world. And I would go back and I'd watch, like, I started getting tapes of like the early 90s WCW stuff and seeing him, and it was just, yeah, I remember the first time I saw that and saw that entrance and saw the, you know, the smoke, and it was like, oh, what's the magic behind that? How have they done that? This is so much cooler than how WWF presented him. Saying that, the mask would get a lot better as time went on. It was a bit Milano 4, the mask he's wearing in his early days.
But that one, yeah, the strap mask that he eventually became more famous for is much better. His singlet gets much better, like all that red trim design. I'm not a fan of it. Like, but when he gets to, like, you know, like, you know, Vader feuding with Sting, look, the mask and the singlet, it's a great, great look. And I like the part where, you know, when I think it's the White Castle of Fear, he wears that like furry white cape. I think that's fucking awesome too. So
he's a badass. I love that period of him, like that Super Bowl III matches, the strap match with Sting. That's one of my favorites of all time.
It's a great, some great stuff. Let's see. So they, like, the hat gets knocked off, and you don't do that to Stan Hansen. So it's on. These guys start just, like, you know, at first though, I gotta say, it first seems like they want to lock up, which is weird. But then they just start, yeah, you know, Vader just like starts teeing off on Hansen. It's with elbows to the face, a headbutt, and stiff forearms to Hansen's chest. And I gotta think all these moves, all these strikes, are super stiff, because they are just like, this is Stan Hansen I'm in the ring with. He's going to stiff the shit out of me. And so I got to start it off, set the pace with him, and maybe try to legit, maybe knock him out, not knock him out, but, you know, like, kind of take him down a peg or two. But hey, this is Stan Hansen. He retaliates with chops and he hits his forearms to Vader's chest really stiffly. There's a bit of a back and forth until Hansen gets put in the corner, and referee, legendary New Japan referee Tiger Hattori, breaks it up. From here, they both get back in the middle of the ring, and again, Vader just starts teeing off on Hansen with stiff shots to the face, and this is, you know, Hansen just starts firing back. It's pretty even at this point, where they're just like trying to beat the fucking shit out of each other, Benno.
I love it. It feels like a real fight. Apparently this match takes place the day before. It was Tyson Buster Douglas took place in Tokyo the night after. Bet you this was stiffer. Like, you know, just like probably drew better as well, to be fair. But yeah, it is that's the thing about this match, and that I remember from seeing it years ago and, you know, rewatching it now. There's no work about it. It's just two blokes throwing bombs. Like, they're literally fighting, you know, out there in front of you. And Hansen's got his eye issues, so we probably can't see what he's hitting. Vader is notoriously just Vader. and it is literally, you know, capital letters, a fight. Like,
that's yeah. you've got to, so we should mention, like, this about Stan Hansen. He has the worst, by his own admission, he has the worst eyesight when he's not wearing his glasses. And he's definitely not wearing his glasses in any of his matches. So a lot of times is, why is Hansen so stiff, especially when he hits the lariat? It's because he does not have any depth perception. And he just like, oh, here's someone in front of me. I'm going to hit them as hard as I can. And you know what? It works. Like, and in Japan, they don't fucking care. It's like, okay, we're also going to hit Stan Hansen as hard as we can because he's hitting us as hard as he can. So we're just going to return it. And I think that's kind of the mentality that Bader goes in to this match with, is that
Bader doesn't need the excuse though. Bader could do that with anyone.
But he's with Stan Hansen. He knows, like, okay, he's going to hit me really hard because Hansen will say he's legally blind without his glasses on. So he's just going to stiff me. He's going to potato me. So I'm just going to do the same thing to him. But yeah, I mean, Bader had the reputation of doing the same thing to his opponents for sure. It's a pretty even fight, and we'll call it that. It's a fight. It's not really a match. It's a pretty even fight at this point. Vader is able to get off a short range clothesline that really pops the crowd. And this crowd is pretty much into it for the most part. There's kind of ebbs and flows to their reaction, depending on like where they're fighting. And we'll talk a bit about that as we get through the course of the match. But he follows up with a stiff kick to the gut. But this is where, you know, this kick, I think, just sets off Hansen for some reason. Hansen really starts laying it in with these stiff, and I have this all in caps, Benno, like stiff elbows to the face of Vader, with Vader firing back as well. But I think this is where, along this exchange, that Hansen hits him so fucking hard to the face that Vader's eye pops out of the socket. Because now you just see, like, okay, Vader's got something wrong with him. He's trying to slow down this match because Vader gets Hansen in the corner. And this is like where he's like, you know, he's got his head close to Hansen's head and just tells him, Stan, this is, I'm just guessing. I'm guessing what's being exchanged here, but this is my guess what's being said. Stan, my fucking eye popped out.
Yep. And like that little is the moment where they kind of go into the arm bar here as well. Like, it's like, because I was watching it going, why is Vader doing an armbar? I was like, oh, I don't know why. And it's just, yeah, clearly there's a bit of communication going on here. Clearly, you know, something has gone wrong. But fuck me, like, it's nasty when you actually get to see.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So yeah, he does go into this armbar spot. He takes him down to the mat, and it's just like, this is such a weird transition. But okay, what we know now, it makes perfect sense for him to try to give himself a breather and try to communicate with Hansen when they're down in the mat, and just like, you know, tell him, like, you know, try to go from there. Vader gives up the armbar and gets up so he can take off his mask. And when he takes off his mask, you can see there is something seriously wrong with his right eye. But you know, you would think that some people might want to take, you know, call an audible and maybe figure out, like, go to the finish at this point. Nope, not here. Because both these guys know, like, hey, we cannot do that. It, you know, for good or bad, they are both, like, you know, fully ingrained in the idea of being professional wrestlers, especially working in Japan, that this match is going to go on. Like, the only way it's not going to go on is if Vader becomes completely blind, I think. But thankfully, that doesn't happen in this match. But Hansen just, you know, Vader gets up, takes off the mask. Hansen just presses the attack on Vader. But, you know, Vader whips him into the corner and hits his signature Vader splash. So, you know, it's still a work. It hasn't devolved into a sheet. You know, like, people say, how do you know when it's still a work? If someone Irish whips you, it's a fucking work. Okay. Because no one's going to fucking, you're not going to allow anyone to Irish whip you in a shoot fight. Okay. So this, if you ever see that Irish whip, into the corner, into the ropes. It's a work. Just so everyone understands that, if you've had any confusion about that. There are some pretty gross camera shots here, Benno, of the eyes swollen up. But yeah. You know what? This doesn't deter Hansen from sending shots to the face still.
I love that, but like this is like a big thing for me in this match that, you know, Vader obviously takes the mask off, and I think it's more, you know, because his eyes so fucked up rather than just want to show it off. And, you know, I think this is the first time people had seen him properly unmasked, I think, in Japan. So that's a big moment. But what I love about it is like, I know you'd never get this match in modern WWE, but like, wrestlers are trained now to like, you know, look for the hard cam, look for the camera, and you know, it's all like that is a lesson drummed into wrestlers these days, like, you know, work the cameras. And it's like, no, the cameras should be finding you. And that's what I love about it. Vader doesn't stop there and make sure everybody sees his eye. You know, you can see he's concerned for himself, and he's trying to keep Hansen away, and he's trying to keep moving, but you get those little split seconds where the camera finally gets him. And that crowd response, when the crowd actually see how fucked up his eye is just like, it absolutely adds to the match, and it adds to the mythology of the match, and it adds to the atmosphere of the match. And it's done in a natural way. It's not done in a way where it's, you know, it's obvious that he wants everyone to see it. You know, we all kind of catch it at that same moment and all have that same reaction, you know, together.
I'm not sure if in 1990, if the Tokyo Dome is set up to have a giant screen. I'm going to assume that there is some kind of like massive screen for the time for people to see and there are multiple screens. There's probably a multiple screen set up above the ring with the lighting rig. So like the fans, even in like the cheap seats, can see on the screen that this really disgusting image of Vader's eye. Like I'm assuming I think it was probably popped back in at this point, but it is so swollen up, you have to be concerned about this man's eyesight. But not Stan Hansen, he's not concerned about the man's eyesight at all. So from here, Stan Hansen snapmares Vader over. He drops an elbow to Vader's shoulder and then locks in a rear chin lock. Vader gets up and hits a headbutt and unleashes a flurry of shots to the head and midsection of Stan Hansen. These all look very painful. Benno, I think he's like I would almost say this is maybe a receipt for the eye, but it's just like this probably would have happened regardless of the eye popping out or not. Vader tries for another Vader splash in the corner, but Hansen gets out of the way and hits Vader with a back suplex, which pops the crowd because they're like, hey, oh my God, you got Vader up for like a suplex. Vader recovers, shoots Hansen into the ropes, and is able to connect with his Vader splash again this time. And Hansen gets up, hits a nasty looking shoulder tackle on Vader that knocks him down. And at this point, I just want to say, like, the pace that these two men are working at is just like nonstop. Like, they're just like, one gets the advantage, then the other one gets the advantage. And they're just like hitting each other with pretty like, you know, hard body shots and shots to the face. And it's pretty amazing that like Vader is like just still willing to stay in this match and get hit in the face. Like, there is something that could go wrong again at any minute with Stan Hansen, and he's still willing to do it. It's like, it's that whole mentality is like, we have to finish this match. We cannot end it sooner than it's meant to end.
Well, that's the thing, because the eye thing happens so early in the match, and there's another at least 10 minutes after that. You know, it runs about, 17, 18 minutes altogether at that pace as well, you know, and at that physicality. But yeah, I think that's the story with the eye, that it was like Vader basically pushed it back in himself, and it was only because his eye was so swollen that it even stayed in. Like that, or, you know, that's the old wives' tale about it, or at least what the story he tells as to what happened. But you can absolutely believe that. So it's kind of, it's staying in because it's, you know, so messed up. But yeah, they don't shy away. And there are little moments, like, you know, even, you know, you mentioned there where, you know, Hansen takes him down and grabs the headlock. But I even like that because, you know, yeah, you know, his eyes all messed up. You want to work a headlock. You want to get in there. You want to, you know, put football pressure on where the man's hair. But they find their rhythm again, and they just keep going at it. And yeah, that's a big thing for me, that this is, you know, a 16, 17 minute match, and it doesn't stop. It's all action. It's, you know, it's just awesome. It's just an awesome spectacle to watch.
Hansen kicks Vader out of the ring, and the fight now spills to the outside. Vader gets rammed. I'm just reading this and I'm just remembering the match. Vader gets rammed face first into the post, and then Hansen whips him into the guardrail. Then Vader's like, okay, yeah, you know, like, I'm not going to try to stop this. Like, he gets rammed face first. Like, yeah, it's a work, but still, it's only a millimeter of what can go wrong, right, Benno? Like, with a spot like that. So, thankfully, nothing happened more than that. He gets whipped into the guardrail. As Hansen falls up, Vader launches himself and hits Hansen with a super stiff lariat. And this is a great moment that the crowd pops for, because, oh my God, he hit Hansen with Hansen's own move. I mean, it's a move that Vader would use as well, but to be able to hit Hansen with the lariat in 1990 is pretty impressive. And it does knock him down, I believe, here. Vader picks up Hansen and in a scoop, and then drops him midsection first onto the guardrail and hits another splash that sends Hansen into the front row seats. And if you were never to have watched this match before and you understood how big matches politically are protected in Japan, or anywhere, actually, not just in Japan, anywhere in the world, you think this is where this match is going to end, in a double count out to protect both guys, because one is the IWGP heavyweight champion, the other guy is Giant Baba's favorite foreign wrestler, one of his biggest stars. And there's no way, okay, how are they going to do this match? You think, okay, if I'm in the crowd, Beto, I think this is probably where this match is going to end. Even if I'm not smartened up to how wrestling works, I think this is probably, because this is like a traditional thing that happens in Japan. Like, okay, two big stars, neither of them can lose. They're gonna do a count out. And you think the count out's going to happen maybe at this point, but yeah, it doesn't. Vader grabs Hansen by the hair, leads him back to the ring, where he throws him back into the ring. And the roar from this crowd is so loud because they're thinking, oh, it's not going to end here. Oh my God, this match is going to continue. We might get a finish. And this is like something we'll get back to throughout, you know, the course of this match. Yeah. But I thought that was a great moment that they kind of, you know, defied expectations, and the crowd rewarded them with such a loud cheer for the just the simple act of Hansen getting thrown back into the ring.
Yeah, and I think the match needs that to be the legendary match that it is, because it would be easy to write this off as the match with the gimmick, you know, the eye, and the match that ends in, you know, in an unsatisfying finish. And if it had stopped here, yes, you know, I could imagine that happening and imagine it being disappointing. But I don't know whether they called an audible or they knew that the crowd had, it would maybe, yeah, be smartened up to the fact that it might be coming and they wanted to tease it. Either way, it's inspired because, yeah, it gets, you know, the crowd going. And I think this extra, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 minutes that we get out of it is what elevates this match, despite, you know, the finish that's coming.
There's a series of body shots from Vader to Stan Hansen. Hansen rolls out of the ring with Vader following him. And I made a note that the crowd enthusiasm noticeably lowers as they know that this dream interpromotional match is more likely to have a fuck finish double count out while both guys are out, you know, on the floor here. So it is interesting. Anytime they go out, the crowd is not into it at all, because they think, because they're educated, they know, they're conditioned to know, like, this right, might be, and we're not going to get the finish that we want to see. We're going to get the finish that we're probably likely to expect it going into this match. But, you know, the crowd does cheer when Vader throws Hansen back into the ring. These guys, I think, are just fucking with the crowd at this point, which is great. I'm all for it. There's a big power slam from Vader, and he goes for the pin, but only gets a 2 count here. And this is great, because this sequence is now they're going for covers, trying to pin each other. And every time they do, the crowd noticeably gets like more and more into this match. Vader goes to the top rope and hits a Vader splash from there and goes to cover Hansen, but only gets a 2. The crowd is well into this, like, because now they are stomping their feet, Benno. And you got to keep in mind, this is not Korakuen Hall. This is not even like Sumo Hall. This is the Tokyo Dome. And I have been in the Tokyo Dome many times. And to have that much sound carry over, that we can hear it on the video of this, is pretty impressive that these people are, that there's enough people in the Tokyo Dome, like, well into, like, being into this match that they're going to like stomp their feet, and you can hear it on the broadcast.
Definitely. And it does feel like they've been whipped up into a frenzy by the violence of it, by the chaos of it, by, you know, the want for this to finish in the ring, and the want to, you know, to see stuff. I mean, it speaks to the star power of the two of them, the credibility of the two of them, and just, yeah, just how over they both are here, because yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, there's a point now where Vader gets on top of Hansen and starts laying in some more body shots, and you can hear there is a noticeable Stan Hansen call, a Hansen call from the crowd, which you would think most of these people are New Japan fans, with maybe with a percentage of them being All Japan fans, because that's the whole point of having the All Japan involvement, is to get those fans to come to this show as well. But I just made a note that this is definitely a showing of how his appeal transcended like the borders of being an All Japan wrestler to being like just a cultural phenomenon to a degree in Japan, you know. And like, so there's like, I think a lot of fans don't care that he's a New Japan wrestler per se. They're just like, oh my God, it's Stan Hansen. I know who he is, regardless of which promotion you follow. Vader drops a big elbow to a prone Hansen and gets a two count. At this point, Hansen fires up and hits a couple of blows on Vader. Vader whips him into the ropes again, but Hansen ducks a back elbow and then is hit with a lariat that sends him to the outside yet again. This is great. This is all Vader putting the, you know, hitting the lariats on Hansen. Hansen has not yet hit his lariat on Vader. Vader puts Hansen up against one of the ring posts, lays in a shot, and then goes for the splash again. But Hansen gets out of the way, and Vader ends up posting himself, and kind of a glutton for punishment to himself. Like he's hitting the post yet again, Benno.
Like a third time. Yeah, he can't help himself. He's into it. He's feeling it. That makes sense to me. I think as well, like, you know, you mentioned that before about like the, you know, the crowd kind of being on like Hansen's side as much as Vader. I think part of that as well is, you know, Hansen, as much as like you want to be sympathetic towards Vader with the eye, like Hansen selling of his ribs and, you know, the amount of damage that Vader's kind of doing to him is just going to naturally pull that reaction out. And yeah, like that, it makes it, you know, feel all the more special.
And Vader is pretty much in control of this match for the last, I'd say, 4 minutes or so. So Hansen presses his advantage with Vader posting himself there, and he hits him, starts hitting with kicks, and then he throws Vader back into the ring, which again, this crowd starts cheering very loudly to show their appreciation for it. Hansen lays in some knees and boots to Vader while he's on the ground, including like, I'll get to that later, but like, it's great. Like he's just beating the shit out of Vader now. Just as like, okay, you got the heat on me. Now it's my turn. Vader rolls out of the ring where Hansen shoulder blocks him over the guardrail. And again, now you think, okay, this is where the match is going to end. Hansen follows him out to the over the guardrail, and they brawl a bit before Hansen throws him back into the ring again to a lot of flaws. They're just like playing this like a maestro. Like both these guys are playing this crowd like it's a violin. There's an elbow to the face, blocks him over the guardrail. Elbow to the face, and Hansen gets a two count on Vader. Hansen follows up with a series of, this is my favorite part, Benno. Hansen follows up with a series of knees to the face of Vader, and these don't look like they're controlled. And got to keep in mind again, Hansen has terrible eyesight. He goes for a third count, but only gets a two here. Hansen hits a nice back elbow as Vader bounces off the ropes and gets a two count again. And then at this point, he really pops the crowd because he signals for his signature finishing move, the Western Lariat, by adjusting his elbow pad. And I always love when he does it, and it never fails to get a big response from the crowd.
It's probably the loudest, like the crowd, they're almost getting louder every time they get back in the ring. But yeah, that moment when like he signals that with the elbow pad, that's probably the loudest that they get. That's when you kind of know, okay, we're at the business end of the match. Like, possibly this is the finish. And yeah, people are going crazy.
Vader reverses the Irish whip and hits Hansen with a beautiful dropkick.
I love that spot.
It's great. It's great. It's like, first of all, he gets up for this dropkick. And like, for a man his size to be so like agile is incredible. But also, like, to also with like the damage of his eye, like to hit it as well as he does, the accuracy of it is like just absolutely incredible.
Great, because it's like you say, that, you know, the signal with the elbow pad, the fact that the lariat's coming, like just adding that extra bit of drama, you know, the Vader reversing the whip, and then to add to it, it being a drop kick, which gets a huge response, was perfect. And I always loved that about Vader. Like, you hear the criticism of Vader. I think I've heard Jim Ross say before about him that, like, you know, he'd have had a longer, more successful career if, you know, people hadn't gotten his ear and told him he should do moonsaults and drop kicks, and they're like, ah, that's what made Vader Vader, though. You know, he was special anyway, you know, as a guy, you know, he walks out and he's special, you know, just looking at him and, you know, his presence and everything. But it's that extra bit, isn't it? That's why he is over to the level he is. It's these little moments, the fact that he can pull something out like this. And it also, it's not just done just for, it's not Keith Lee just doing a high spot in AEW, which is, you know, I very much enjoy when he does, but this was Vader does this because he's desperate, because he's, you know, he's a wounded animal and he's about to be put away, and everyone thinks that potentially the match is about to end. There's logic there, you know, him hitting that desperation dropkick, and like you say, both in real life and in the kayfabe match, it maybe takes as much out of him as it, you know, as it does Hansen. It's a beautiful storytelling device as well.
You have to keep in mind that also this is the era of Bam Bam Bigelow. A big man who is, you know, super agile as well, doing top rope moves. Maybe not moonsaults, but he's doing top rope moves. He's doing drop kicks. He's showing very how agile he is. And if you ever watched like Bam Bam Bigelow's shoot interview, which I have, he talks about like oh yeah, Leon always had like some kind of complex with me, even though they were tag partners in New Japan. Like he felt that Vader was always like kind of jealous of him and was like always like in competition with him because like, oh, we're, you know, essentially the same type of wrestler, but I can do all these filing moves. And so Vader was like, well, so can I, so I'm going to do them. But again, I don't think Vader like, you know, did it. Like, I don't think you'd ever see like when he's taking out jobbers in WCW, he's not hitting them with moonsaults. He's not doing any of that shit. He's just like choke slamming them, power slamming them, and like hitting them with power bombs and stiffing them with shots and lariats and shit like that. So like, you know, like if he's saving it for like when he's fighting Sting or I don't know who else, like Cactus Jack or things like that, then that's, I think that's perfectly fine. And sure, he probably would have like done less damage to his body over the years if he didn't do as many moonsaults. But the dropkick, I don't see what the criticism of the dropkick is, because I think it's a very safe move to execute, and you're not really landing that hard. I feel like you've been in the ring, not me, so you tell me better. So
I was terrible at drop kicks, mate. So you know, not the one. But I was like, but me and my tag team partner Dylan Roberts, he was Dynamite Kid, I was Davey Boy Smith. I couldn't get as high as he could. But no, but you know, it probably, those types of things probably went good than his knees and his body in general. But you know, he still had a decent, you know, length career, and it, if it went wrong, it was, you know, the booking in WWF more than, you know, his body.
Oh, for sure. And Shawn Michaels.
And Shawn Michaels, that's probably a big part of the issue. But no, you mentioned the Bam Bam thing, and like that's always kind of sad that they had that little like rival, because anytime you see them together or a foot, like how badass they look together, and how like, oh, just the idea of those two being like two killers together. But I guess, you know, it's Vader wants to be the top. I want Gaikokujin, is it? Is
that Gaikokujin. Gaikokujin. There you go. You can say it, so no problem.
He wants to be the top one. So, you know, that's understandable, that professional rivalry was there.
Yes. From here, they have a short strike and ducking exchange that Vader wins by hitting a lariat that sends Hansen into the ropes, where Hansen bounces off and finally hits Vader with his own lariat to a massive pop from the crowd. But hey, it does not knock Vader down on the mat, though. And they end up brawling to the outside again. And then they do one of my least favorite, in fact, I would say one of my most hated sequences in any wrestling match, and that is the dreaded walk and brawl around the ringside area. And I, Benno, I fucking hate walk and brawls. Anytime people tell me, oh, are you excited that Minoru Suzuki is going to be wrestling in America? I'm like, fuck no. You know why? Because there's a 99.9% chance it's going to be a fucking walking brawl. And yeah. every indie fucking wrestler in America is going to wrestle Minoru Suzuki's match.
Same match.
He's not going to wrestle your fucking, unless he really, really likes you. He's not wrestling your match. You're wrestling his match and you're not getting jack shit in. So like most of the time, like I learned the last, like, I don't know, two, three tours of America that he did, like with like all these indie companies. I was like, oh, he's going to wrestle this guy. It's like, who cares? I love Minoru Suzuki, but I like a competitive Minoru Suzuki match where someone is like his equal and he's wrestling. Mm-hmm. He's letting them control the match as much as he's controlling the match. When it's just like some dude that he doesn't know who the fuck that is. And he's like, anyways, the whole point being, I hate walking brawls. I don't know how you feel about them.
No, I'm with you. And like the Suzuki thing as well. Like this, it was this last tour he did, you know, where he was doing a lot of GCW and it was the Daniel Garcia match where everyone was like, oh, Daniel Garcia is going to get in there with Suzuki. And they go, and it was, Daniel Garcia did the walking brawl on the outside with him and did all the, haha, you're a young boy spots. And then, you know, they tease the power driver and then they go home. Like that's what Daniel Garcia got out of Minoru Suzuki. It was not what you'd hope for, but no, I'm with you. There's a time and a place for a walking brawl, you know, Steve Austin in 98, maybe I'll forgive, but yeah, not as the deathmatch guy as well. You know, they are the most boring parts of those matches too.
Actually, in Japan, most death matches do not go into the crowd. They stay in the ring. Really? Actually, yeah. Because that's where all the plunder is.
Ah, oh, there you go.
Yeah, you know, they do like surprise, but like I'm not being a deathmatch aficionado or a fan of it at all. But like I will say to the credit of Japanese deathmatch wrestling, that most of it does stay in the ring, actually. So you know, like American deathmatch wrestling, yeah, it does brawl because that's like the tradition. It comes out of like Memphis and Florida. Of that type of wrestling, like of the like brawling and using hardcore, you know, weaponry and shit like that. But back to this match, they do the dreaded walk and brawl. Taika Hattori starts to count and even tries to get back into the ring. But alas, that was never going to happen, Benno. And there's not going to be a clean finish. And this match ends in a double count out in 15 minutes and 47 seconds. And the crowd is not happy with this. And no. Nor can I blame them because, you know, to Vader and Stan Hansen's credit, they teased this crowd so much. Every time they went out, they got back in to loud cheers. They go back out, come back in. Then you think, okay, he hits a lariat, maybe, but no. I actually find this a very, like, you know, like, I didn't expect anything different, to be honest with you. But it's a very anticlimactic thing to this match.
How rare would the draw be in this? I know Brandon did a lot of like graphics of like how often you get non-finishers in like various companies. I know he covered All Japan and New Japan. Like, is it as rare as you would assume it would be? You know, this type of finish.
In All Japan, it was more common before in like the 70s and 80s, like. Non-finishes would happen quite regularly because because you have to understand Giant Baba had to you know deal with a lot of big egos in All Japan, starting from like in the beginning having the, you know, Mil Máscaras and Dos Caras work for him. They're not doing any jobs necessarily for people, like that's the reputation that both like Mil Máscaras had, you know. And then later on you have like, okay, I'm going to have Rick, the touring NWA world champion, Harley Race and Ric Flair come in here, have title matches against my guys. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the times those matches did not end decisively. They were count outs or time limit draws. You had, you know, infamously Stan Hansen, like he was willing to do stuff for Baba. He would not do for American promoters, like put people over if he was asked to. But you also have to understand who else is working for Giant Baba in the 80s. Bruiser Brody, Abdullah the Butcher. Okay, these are wrestlers who have like a lot of money placed in like in their aura, you know, Brody and Abdullah, I think especially. And you know, Giant Baba is a promoter that they were willing to do business with if it was only done sparingly, right? So a lot of times Bruiser Brody is not putting over Jumbo Tsuruta or Tenryu cleanly. It might be a draw. It might be. And then he has to protect his native guys. He has to protect Henry. He has to protect Jumbo. So these are the things that kind of like Baba did. It's not until the 90s, until like he sees the influence of like shoot style program promotions like UWFI. Oh, they're making a lot of money because they're all doing clean finishes that he switches to an all clean finish style booking, which, you know, just drives business through the fucking roof in All Japan in the 90s. And we'll, you know, like that's some kind of a theme I talk about when we talk about this era of All Japan, is like the business just goes through the roof because it's all you as a fan are expecting clean finishes in pretty much every match now, regardless if it has like your top foreign wrestlers of like Stan Hansen, Steve Williams, Terry Gordy in there with Misawa, Kawada, Taue, Kobashi, or whoever. So this is rare. This is like the start of where Baba is going to go transition into this clean finish. He's already started it maybe at this point as well. Like, I don't know the exact timeline of it, but if you go into this match, like, okay, Vader is the top guy in New Japan, literally, because he's the Tibwave champion. And Stan Hansen is probably the second biggest star in All Japan next to Jumbo Tsuruta on Baba's roster. You as a wrestling fan, I'm sure like people like, you know, like at the time, like let's just say Dave Meltzer. Dave Meltzer is not going to go tell you this is probably going to end up with a non-finish because none of these guys can afford to lose. None of their promotions will allow them to put any one of the others over cleanly. And do I think Vader was going to put over Stan Hansen cleanly in this match? No. Do I think Hansen was going to be like, yeah, I'll put Vader over as a top foreign wrestler in All Japan. I'm going to put him. No, that wasn't going to happen. Like, I don't think there was any level of this where you would be able to get a clean finish agreed upon by anyone from Baba, Inoki, Choshu, you know, who Vader or Hansen himself, you know?
Well, that's kind of my thing. Cause it's like, you know, obviously the reaction is hugely negative. But it's a loud, loud booing you get after this. Do you think, are people angry at the fact just the match is over? Are we angry at the ref? Is it directed at the booking, the promotion? Like, what is that, you know, aimed at, I suppose? Like, what's your read on that?
I think it's just aimed at the finish, like, not to any promotion. I don't think it's aimed necessarily at Vader or Hansen, per se.
Right.
I think people... Like, even though kayfabe is pretty much intact still to some degree in the 90s, I think people have an understanding of, like, you know, just seeing years and years of these kinds of finishes that, okay, like, you know, but if we keep in mind that contextually there is a trend towards having clean finishes, like, right. I can understand maybe, okay, oh, we didn't get the clean finish that we've been kind of been given. In both New Japan and All Japan as starting with the beginning of this decade. So yeah, I don't think it's directed towards the promotion. I don't think it's directed towards Taika Hattori. I don't think it's directed to the wrestler. I just think it's directed to this, just the situation in of itself.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, yeah, I mean, and I don't think it necessarily, I suppose it, like, I was thinking to myself, you know, does it hurt the match, or even like from a pure star rating point of view, for it not to have to fight decisive finish? I don't know if it matters so much, because I think the match is that, isn't it? It's two equals going back and forth, you know, dropping bombs on each other, and, you know, they leave the match kind of as equals, so I suppose you don't have that satisfying one guy goes over the other, but you still get the wild chaotic brawl that is this match. And if there was ever a match that almost justifies it, I think it's this one. Yeah, I know that is a thing, obviously, you know, that people all beat it with, and, you know, knock half a star off or whatever. But yeah, I don't know if it, you know, maybe it's the fact that I, you know, I've seen it before and I'm rewatching it, but it didn't really bother me, you know, rewatching it here. Maybe it's the fact that I knew it was coming, but I don't think it kind of hurts the story they tell in the match or you know, the way it ends.
No, I mean, I would, if I was to give this a star rating, I'd probably go 4.
Yeah,
probably go a flat four, just because of the spectacle of it, of like the context of like Hansen versus Vader. Hansen's from All Japan. Vader is the New Japan champion at the time. But yeah, it's a fun match. I still got to say, like, yeah, the finish is very, very anticlimactic. It is what it is. But, you know, like they, you know, both guys, you know, get back in the ring. Hansen gets back in the ring first and does his trademark youth, you know, with the bulls, you know, youth. And then, you know, he gets a chorus of boos from the crowd, which is funny. And then he just goes back to his dressing room, and you can see one of his attendants that he goes back to the dressing room with is Ken Kobashi here, and that's kind of cool to see. Vader gets back into the ring right after Hansen leaves, and then he, with his arms raised, and he gets a much better response from the crowd because he's the hometown champion, it's a cool moment for Vader. I think if anyone deserved it in this match, it's him. He wrestled for another 10 minutes with a deeply damaged eye, that could have gone horribly wrong, but thankfully it did not. And I don't know, just as a kind of closing notes, this was a big deal when this match was announced. You had the two top foreign wrestlers in Japan facing each other in a super important promotional match that was for, again, I can't even stress this enough how important that it was for. It was not a non-title match. It was for the IWGP title, and that you could have had the possibility of the top foreign wrestler of All Japan Pro Wrestling holding the most prestigious title in New Japan at that time. The double count out to be expected politically. Again, no one from the top, the president of each company to the referee to Vader Hansen was ever gonna say, one of us, this guy should go over. No, that was never gonna happen. I think it's a legendary match. I think a lot of it has to do with the context of the positions of both Vader and Hansen at this time, that it's actually really stiff match. And because Vader's eye popped out during the course of it and he pushed it back in.
Yeah, that's it. It's the story behind that. But it's just a hell of a lot of fun, isn't it? Just to watch these two go back and forth and just, chew scenery basically and, fill these 18 minutes with just wildness. I was going to say, have you seen the WCW follow-up to this? Because that's something I had memories of and revisited in prep for this. Similar finish, not quite as memorable though.
With the Fujinami flair match?
Yeah, it's WrestleWar 91, the show that's on.
One of the stupidest finishes, Venom, because they should have just put the belt on Fujinami and had him be the champion and then lose the belt to Flair in America. It would have strengthened their relationship with New Japan. It would have given Fujinami, who didn't need more credibility because he was already a legend in New Japan at the time, but you could have pushed him a bit harder to American audiences. Like, this is like the most, the most popular wrestler in Japanese wrestling. He's the current WCW world champion. He's going to defend the title against Flair in a rematch. I think they just had a decisive finish. It's really, I just think, to get on that topic, it was a really dumb maneuver, but hey, dumb maneuvers by WCW brass, top brass.
In
91, it's to be expected, but some amazing matches, especially between the juniors of New Japan and the cruiserweights of WCW. Some fantastic stuff. Like, I still think the Shinjiro Otani versus Eddie Guerrero match, if you've never seen that, Benno, I highly recommend it. Oh, you're an Eddie Guerrero denier.
Let's not get into that. I don't need any more heat.
Listen, I will say this. Latino heat, Eddie Guerrero, I'm not a huge fan of. I just think
this is where we agree. Yeah.
That's where, for me, it's like, I don't have as much love for Eddie in that period, even though he's the WWF champion at this point, it's too gimmicky, too much to like. I hate that character, to be quite honest with you. I just think it's really a really terrible character. But WCW Eddie Guerrero, I love. New Japan Pro Wrestling, Black Tiger 2, Eddie Guerrero, I adore. Anytime he gets to fight any of the juniors from New Japan, Liger, El Samurai, Benoit Malenko, and Shinjiro Otani, Koji Kanemoto, I absolutely love it. But, maybe in the future, whenever I end up finishing this series, maybe I'll do my other great love, which is 1990s New Japan junior heavyweight wrestling. Not the heavyweight wrestling, the junior heavyweight wrestling, I think is just as good as the All Japan Heavyweight Wrestling. But I think we will wrap it up here. Any final thoughts about this match, Benno?
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, like, it's an absolute banger. Like, the comparison I was going to make, like briefly to that WrestleMania 91 match with the two of them. They try and transport this match to America and do a lot of the similar things, but with the audience not really understanding why it was important. You got Jim Ross on commentary trying to explain, you know, what a big deal this match was in Japan the year earlier, and, you know, explaining how dangerous these two are. And they do a similar, I don't even know why they do it in WCW, a DQ brawl to the back. I'm not sure politically that you needed to do that at that point. And it was quite interesting seeing them side by side. Okay, here's one where it really works, and here's the two of them on more of a night off where it doesn't. But, you know, this the match review today, it's special, and, you know, it might be because of those real life reasons and the injury to Vader and the gimmickry surrounding that, but it's two, you know, heavyweights in there, you know, absolute prime. Blew my mind, by the way, watching this, that Stan Hansen was 41, 3 years older than I am today, and he looks about 70. He looks like someone's grand. He always looked like someone's granddad, didn't he? That's Stan Hansen. That's
like in the 70s. In the 70s, he looked like he was 45.
Exactly.
Just yeah. A kind of weathered face that he has, the mustache. It's something to behold.
Still a young man here, still in, you know, very much in his prime, I would say, by my standards. And yeah, just seeing two heavyweights who are massively over, you know, as foreign stars in Japan, just go at it, really. And yeah, if anyone out there hasn't seen it, you know, hopefully we've done a sell job on it, because it's something. Yeah,
it's readily available for you to watch for free anywhere. We'll have a link in the show description for this episode. But before we go, I want to make one quick note. If you're talking about like kind of interpromotional, like foreign wrestlers facing each other, I think one of the best examples of that is the Steiner Brothers versus Stan Hansen. Steve Williams and Terry Gordy in WCW, because you had the top foreign tag team of New Japan and the Steiner Brothers taking on the top foreign tag team for all Japan for wrestling, meeting in WCW for WCW tag and the NWA tag team titles, and they had decisive finishes in those matches, because they were, you know, at that point, Gordy and Williams are pretty much WCW contracted wrestlers, so they didn't have to really worry about Giant Baba too much. And Steiners were still considered, you know, like more WCW wrestlers, but they were the top tag team, you know, wrestling in New Japan in the 90s. So it was like, for me, as a fan who was like really starting to follow this stuff, I was like being aware. It's like, wow, that's amazing that these guys are having a series of matches against one another. And there's decisive finishes, because Gordy and Williams get the upper hand in a lot of these matches.
The one I remember is, I was just trying to remember if it was from that show, but it is like one of the greatest WCW shows of all time, Beach Blast 92. The one with a Sting Cactus Jack on it, with the clothesline finish on the stage, and Steamboat Rude in the Iron Man match. And yeah, they go on last, don't they? The Steiners and Gordy and Williams. That one is a draw. But yeah, we should review that at some point. We'll get you over on Grapple. We'll do it. We've been talking for years about doing a flashback on Beach Blast, going back to the Joe days. So that'll be a fun one to visit.
I'd be up for that. Like, I think I'd have to revisit that show, but I'm pretty sure I've seen it in its entirety and enjoyed it. But it'd be nice to revisit it. But yeah, we're gonna wrap it up with here. I want to thank Benno. It's very late for him, by the way. So I thank him for staying up late to do this match with me. And next month we're gonna have a special match. We're gonna do the anniversary of a very, very important match in the history of not only All Japan Pro Wrestling, but in wrestling in general. And I'm not gonna necessarily reveal it right now, but I will reveal that our planned guest is gonna be the first appearance of my Post Perez co-host and the head cheese over at Post Wrestling, that's John Pollock. And then when we are ready to announce the match that we're going to review, we will do so. But I just have to formalize the dates of recording with John, and he's very much up for it. He said, yeah, I'll do it. Let's do it. And so I'm very excited, Benno, to have like John on. Obviously someone I talk to quite often on podcasts, but this will be his first time here on the Long and Winding Railroad. I'm very excited to have his appearance here, following Eddie Kingston and you.
I was going to say, I just realized I've got the mark pick of me and Eddie Kingston behind me on my desk in front of me. I've got my postcard of John and my, I became a post patron. You know, it's all synergy here.
It's all synergy. Card, so. It's great. And I look forward to like us finally meeting in person, whether it's me coming to Liverpool to have some, you know, potato wedges over at the Chippies, the Chinese Chippies in Liverpool, or you coming over to here to Toronto, hang out with me, John, and the rest of the post crew, maybe the BDE as well, and have some nachos and or poutine. And a couple of beers. So there you go. We'll do that.
I just want to know what you'll make of the Chinese chippies over here, mate. I think they'll blow your minds. Salt and pepper chicken, spring rolls. Alongside fish and chips. It's gonna blow your mind.
I place complete trust in your hands and in the hands of Matty Edwards. if I do not like it, just be aware that you will get eviscerated on air by me in the future days. Yeah.
That's happened to me more than once, so that's all good. I'm fine with that.
All right, so thanks to everyone for checking this episode out. Please go to store.postwrestling.com, get the long and winding railroad T-shirt, and we have black and white. If you know, while you're there, buy some other T-shirts. There's the Bushby and Thompson Adventures T-shirt that I have. I like wearing that. It's a fun T-shirt. Any of the post brand stuff like this. You should wear these are there. They get the hats. We got tons of really great merchandise over at store.postwrestling.com. You know, not just for my show, but like for tons of other shows as well. Please support everyone at postwrestling.com. And Benno, thanks so much. And thanks to all the listeners and viewers for watching and listening and supporting the show. And until next time, I will say goodbye.